Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
The Mental Health Foundation will honor TV journalist Bob Woodruff at its annual August evening in Saratoga on Monday, August 18th, at the Saratoga National Golf Course. Woodruff, whose recovery from traumatic brain injury suffered while on assignment for ABC in Iraq in 2006, will be recognized for his outstanding work with the Bob Woodruff Foundation. The foundation's mission is to ensure injured veterans and their families are thriving long after they return home. It's a great pleasure to welcome Bob Woodruff back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being here, sir.
Hey, Joe. Good.
Very nice to have you with us. Give us a sense of how this foundation came to be.
Our foundation, which was one that certainly began after when I recovered. You know, my wife and my brothers were pretty shocked that when they came to visit me in Bethesda Naval that I was pretty treated very well, and I had a lot of people around me, had a company that was supporting me with ABC, and some of them there didn't have exactly the same. And the fact, too, is that there's a lot of injuries in these wars of Iraq and Afghanistan, a lot of them from improvised explosive devices that are different than previous wars, and there's just a lot more complicated issues they have to deal with once these guys come back from the war.
When you look at the role of your foundation, how do you think it fills in the blanks then?
Well, first of all, we are really doing a lot of the vetting to make sure which ones of all of these charity groups and foundations and organizations that have been formed, really more than 40,000 since the wars began, which ones are really great ones. And we raise money and find that money's best path to be the most efficient that they can. So we're concentrating the more innovative, new things that need to be done to try to deal with those. It's been, you know, been, what, 12, 13 years almost now since the invasion of Afghanistan all those years ago. And so
right.
We have multiple deployments, and some of these things, as I said, are very complicated things. So we've raised more than $20 million so far and found their way into nearly 100 organizations around the country. So they're all good, and it's all found a good direction.
When it comes to your health and to your recovery, are you still learning things about brain injury?
Yeah, sad but true. Before this happened to me, I had no idea what the words TBI and post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury and all sorts of others. I didn't really know those because those entered into my world. You know, I've certainly followed a lot of all of the research, et cetera, and I think it's gotten a lot more attention in terms of traumatic brain injury because of this war. I mean, if there's anything good about these wars, it would be medical advancement, and I think brain injury is one of them, but it's a complicated organ. You know, this is not the liver or the kidney. This is something that is very complicated, and we're starting to learn a lot, but a long way to go.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you were injured in 2006. How do you still feel those effects? Do you fully know what you're dealing with now?
I think I have an idea what I'm dealing with. I think that, I mean, it's a heck of a lot better than it was 8.5 years ago when this happened. I still suffer from aphasia, which is really because I was struck in the left part of the brain. That's a loss of largely words and language. So some of the letters and the words get twisted around, so I confuse words that are very similar to each other. And it takes some time for me to come up with a name, especially because that names don't have another synonym to make my point. So that certainly still is the case. But the good thing is my brain is... you know, it's pretty good. I still understand everything, and I got to express everything. It's just literally it's finding the words. And I think everybody out there that's got aphasia knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's frustrating sometimes that you can't even express what you want to talk about.
And does it get easier? I mean, as time goes on and you learn how to deal with it and even to work through that exasperation, does that help? You find ways to trigger.
To deal with all these
yeah.
issues? Yeah, I think there's a lot of things in life. I think there's sometimes very positive aspects to all of this, and I think people that suffer from something, that as long as you've got a path that is going upward as opposed to downward and things are getting better over time, then that kind of gives you a different way to look at the issues that you've got. I've also said, too, to people that you have to figure out a different part or a different place in life that you were not in before, because you don't want to just, you know, hold on to what you had before, because you've got to change in an instant. I think that's with everything that we've got out there, from, you know, you lost somebody to cancer, or you lost a family member. There's certain ways that you look at life that sometimes can give you a better perspective on life. I mean, right now, I feel like I feel less bothered by certain things, just because I realize that life is short, and it could have ended 8.5 years ago, so I feel fairly blessed and lucky to be where I am now. So I do deal with this stuff better than I would have predicted.
As I mentioned, you're being honored by the Mental Health Foundation. Their focus on ending stigma associated with mental illness. So you've become, your eyes have been open to that world as well.
Yeah, the numbers are pretty stunning to people that they taught me, because I'm not really have dealt with a lot of mental illness, although technically mine is so. But the numbers are something like 20% have diagnosable issues with mental illness, everybody in the world. And so they're learning about that. And there's others that I know that have been involved in this, because there is absolutely a stigma that you talked about. People feel like ashamed if they got some kind of mental illness, and there's a fear they won't get a job offer, they won't, you know, get a husband or a wife or a friend because of that. But that is absolutely, given the fact that so many of them have it out there, that I think it's true that this foundation wants people to talk about it, express it, because even if there are downsides to it that may exist, that people may look at you differently, that's only better in dealing with your own way of life if you actually are honest about it and talk to other friends about it and maybe seek out some therapy for it.
When you think of the stigma, do you understand it? I mean, do you understand of how we are at this point, and why we have overcome so many stigmas regarding many different things, and yet this is one that seems to be fairly deeply rooted?
The stigma that I know about the most, that I've lived with for the last 8 years plus since we started our foundation, is the stigma about PTSD, for example. It's one thing, you can be incredibly manly if you're physically injured by something. You're hit by a bomb, you're shot by a bullet, and you're a soldier in the military. But to come back and say that I've got mental issues, that I have actually been 12 deployments in this war, I've been walked around the fields in the sand where I have no idea where the bomb is, when I've witnessed other friends of mine, my other in my unit that were killed or tortured, what may be, that does lead to a post-traumatic stress. And that had a gigantic stigma in the beginning of these wars. The numbers were unbelievable. Something like 10% of those with some kind of post-traumatic stress that would actually talk about and be honest about it. Those numbers are well beyond 50% now. But that's starting to change, because people see that they've got their own mental illness, post-traumatic stress tribe that have the same thing, and they can be friends and another way to look at it. And then more and more you'll learn about it, that companies still want to hire you, and women want to still marry you, and friends want to stay with you. All of that happens when people finally realize that, wow, you're normal, you're good, you got a thing, but we all have things. So that stigma starts to fade away, but it takes time for people to get used to it.
How have you seen your overcoming the brain injury affect your work? Not so much the physical, but the way you approach journalism.
Well, I took a different route. I had a really pretty much a sort of photographic memory. I was able to memorize lines almost as if I was an actor in a play. You know, I can memorize my lines. I could remember every candidate and the campaign I was covering. I can remember anybody that's run the president and been president of the United States for the last 200 years. All these kinds of things, you kind of forget how valuable those can be if you're doing a lot of your anchoring a program, for example, which I was. I mean, when I took over from Peter Jennings, that was never a problem. But then when I lost this and I lost my memory for names, then I had to do a different kind of reporting where I did not have to rely on memorization of that for live reporting. I'm still doing reporting. I'm still doing exactly what I did before. I just came back from Israel. I was reporting about the war there, which I called the Tunnel War. And I was also in the World Cup, covering that in Brazil with ESPN and ABC. So I'm doing exactly what I did before that way, but I'm just not doing the same kind of anchoring programs that I did before.
And you're enjoying it. You enjoy the work.
Yeah, I love it. I got this kind of addiction to it. But one thing I have to tell you, that one thing I really did love was covering and telling the story of what's happening in the wars that we as a country are involved in. And I promised to my wife, and really to ABC as well, because they went through a lot on this too, and certainly to my four kids, that I'm not going to go into war zones anymore. So I wasn't over in Israel, but I was not going into Gaza. And I was not putting on helmets, and I was not putting on body protections. I just will not do that same kind of thing anymore. Listen, I'll go to places that are not always the safest places.
Right.
Like, I'll go in the sewers of Romania, and I'll go to the caves and the coal mines of the countryside of India, whatever it may be. I will do some things that are dangerous, but I won't go into war zones where I somehow could be shot or blown up by somebody.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're doing that more out of respect to your family and to your network than you are out of any personal concern that if you did not have those concerns, it would be something you would do.
Joe, I love that kind of stuff. Yes, I do not want to, I don't want to give up what that is, but I also think it's kind of fun to try something else and do something in a different direction. But number one priority on this is to not make my little daughter or my son worried about me every minute that I'm gone and on the road somewhere. I owe them so much. I covered wars for too many years with too many kids and a wife that I love, and I'm not gonna do that anymore. And it's hard for me to give it up, but it's pretty easy to do because I still have my family, and they still love me.
What do you think a reporter should know, the ingredients they should have to go into a situation like that? If you are to talk to a colleague and say to her, okay, if you're going in, this is what you need to know.
You mean if someone, other reporter, is going to a dangerous place?
Yes.
To cover a war or whatever it may be?
Well, what I would assume have the same concerns that you have now about their family and to people who love them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's always the case. I think, there's somebody who's, 23 years old and just got out of school and wants to do that adventurous stuff. That's one way to look at it. And then those who are, got kids that they got to put through college and they don't want you to do it. Those are two extremes to which ones to look at. So I never give anybody an advice about what to do to stay safe in these kinds of wars, because I don't want ever to say you should do this and then suddenly happens because I said it. I'm never going to tell anybody how to do it. Except you should go out and get some kind of medical training in order to deal with anything that does happen like that. But I'm not going to tell anybody my recommendations about it. That's totally up to you. And what I do say, though, is reporting needs to be done in wars, because otherwise you wouldn't even know what's going on. Right. And it's not fair to the country to not know what our soldiers, what our troops are doing, and what's being followed and what's not.
The Mental Health Foundation is honoring Bob Woodruff in an August evening in Saratoga on Monday night, August 18th, at the Saratoga National Golf Course. The Saratoga National Golf Course on August the 18th. You can find out more information by going to mentalhealthfoundation.net. mentalhealthfoundation.net. Bob Woodruff, a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much, and look forward to seeing you in Saratoga.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, you can find out more information about the August 18th event by going to mentalhealthfoundation.net. mentalhealthfoundation.net. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.